Today on the Cameron Journal podcast, we are joined by Joe Ignace. He has written a book, I'm sure I ruined his name, called The Problem with Potential: How to Stop Overthinking and Get Out of Your Own Way. It says here, The Problem with Potential is a revolutionary self-improvement guide that delves deep into the barriers that prevent us from realizing our true potential. This transformative work equips readers with the tools to confront and overcome their internal obstacles, liberating them from these self-imposed limitations that hinder their path to greatness. So, this book was always very compelling and interesting for me because I, like many neurodivergent people, were always told from a very young age how much wonderful potential we have. In fact, people have said that about me for so long, I got tired of hearing it. And only now am I getting old enough that people don't necessarily say that anymore. They just kind of say you're great or you're bad, and that's fine. That's somehow easier. And there's been a lot of talk online about the potential of gifted kids and gifted kid programs and all this type of thing. And so potential is a very loaded word. So I want to start off right from the beginning and kind of get into that. But first, before we dive into the loaded word of potential, we're going to hear from Joe and find out more about him and his book. So, hello and welcome to the Cameron Journal podcast.
Hey Cameron, thanks so much for having me.
Excellent. Thank
Great
you. So,
intro.
yeah, so why don't you tell us a little about yourself and your book, and then we'll get into potentialities.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm Joe. I grew up in a Tri-Cities area of Northeast Tennessee called Johns City. Born in Scotland. Grew up six kids in my family. Dad's an astrophysicist at East Tennessee State. Mom's nurse. Went to University of Tennessee and from 2016 to 2019, graduated early, summa cum laude. And then I did door-to-door sales 7 years throughout college and graduated totally debt-free. I ran a sales organization when I was really young. I was coaching and mentoring, young people, 18 to 24-year-olds, to go make $40,000 in about 11 or 12 weeks selling books door to door, 80 hours a week, straight commission in the summers. I ended up being the top 0.1% of salespeople in that organization in recruiting and leadership. And I was running a $1.4 million sales organization when I was 24. After that, I started a fitness startup with some partners called Elevate Wellness. We sold fitness coaching to entrepreneurs and through Instagram and content creation. I started podcasting YouTube around that time. And then in 2023, in January, I started the Knowledge Gap Company where we help business owners and entrepreneurs grow their businesses. And that's where we are today. And I started writing The Problem with Potential about 2 years ago, almost to the day, up in Michigan when I was on a recruiting trip where I was meeting with a lot of my managers and sales managers at Michigan State. And I got snowed in during a snowstorm. And I started writing the book because I found myself repeating the same principles and mindsets that I had developed from doing one of the hardest things you could ever do, door-to-door sales. And I started writing them down so I could give them to my recruits and the people I mentored. So I would have just wouldn't have to repeat myself anymore, actually. So, there you go.
No, that's very, very good. One of the most interesting people I ever met, it was this elderly couple who had up they had upgraded but downsized their home. They had lived their whole lives in this like three bedroom, one bath, 1950 sort of house, and they moved to a nicer house kind of out of town. And
Yeah.
she had health issues, so they had all the lovely disability stuff, and it was and more room for the grandkids and all this type of thing.
Sure.
And I was helping them, move and all this sort of thing. And he had m made most of his money and lived most of his life as a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman,
Oh yeah,
which you
curvy
don't
guy.
see anymore. That is gone now. But he was absolutely fascinating. And he kind of in the moving back and forth and loading and all this type of thing, he had really I learned a lot about his life in the business and how he'd grown it from just kind of him selling a vacuum cleaner to, selling multiple ones and having a team. And then when people were paying them on time, selling those off to other companies to get the money to keep all this sort of thing. And so, yeah, it was a very interesting sort of thing. And you're absolutely right. Door-to-door sales is a very, very difficult thing. And he'd started with just himself and he'd grown into this whole huge thing. And then he eventually sold that business off and retired. So if Shades of the Future, 40 years from now, that will be you. So
Sweet.
and yeah, so that's very good. So when it comes to potential, what do you think is the biggest key to really finding the outer edge of what you can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just talking to Bruce Hurwitz about this on his podcast a couple of days ago, and you know, we were just talking about this actual key. What I've come up with in my own life, and that I've seen be the biggest predictor of actually reaching your unlocking your actual potential, and whatever it is that you're designed to do, is the pursuit of helping others.
That's very interesting. You know, it's kind of funny you said that. That always comes up again and again. That's one of those that you hear over and over and over again. As you know, and I've talked to people, there are 210 episodes of this podcast. I think this is probably about 209 or 210. By the time this comes out. And that one I hear over and over and over again. So what is it, you know, in terms of helping people, what is it really that, you know, how do you feel like that's had an impact in your own business? What's, you know, who is someone that you really kind of came alongside, helped them do something that really changed their life?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's kind of two parts. I'd like to just break down, I think, the concept first, and then, you know, going through some personal stories. Remind me of that because I'll forget. It's basically scientifically proven. I mean, there's a book called, Man's Search for Meaning, I believe, by Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a psychologist, and he was, he was a Jew during Nazi Germany and World War II. So he was in an encampment. I don't remember if it was Auschwitz or whatever it was, but he survived
He
the
was in
German camp.
Dachau.
Yeah, Dachau. Thank you. There you go. You know this book.
I very well, very, very well. Yes,
Good.
yes,
I love
yes.
it. So
Yeah.
you know this book really well, you know. But he basically talks about his experience, and you know, one of the things that jumps out the most to me is just seeing how the longevity of people's lives based on having a purpose or meaning for their life, and how he talks about how the reason that he needed to survive, he had to survive, is share what he saw, right? And share that with the world. And so even though his, you know, family died off, and tragically, and you know, there's something to do with the mind that determines success potential. And you know, to me, there's another book by Simon Sinek. Boy, I can't think of the name of it right off the top of my head. I feel like it's Outliers. Pretty sure it's Outliers or something like that. But he basically talks about Medvedev.
I
I
think
can't
that
remember
was
his
Malcolm
name.
Gladwell, but go on with Simon
Malcolm Gladwell. Thank you very much. Simon
Sinek.
Sinek does a different one. It's Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
I think it's his book. And he just talks about how, you know, during the Soviet Union around the same time, there were these, you know, ecologists that had this big seed food bank, that was the start of some international, you know, conservation program for, you know, the different foods and crops and grains that we eat. And in a Russian city that was under being besieged by, you know, Germans, that these guys would literally not eat the store. They would starve to death defending these seeds because those seeds meant that the human race could continue. And without them, you know, horticulture would just collapse in Russia or something. It's the same thing too when you see like all of, like, you hear the stories and maybe in some pictures, videos, whatever, of where the mom's able to just lift that huge thing or do whatever to save the child, go through the pain, right? And the concept's the same for reaching your potential. Anything that you want to do, if you're inwardly focused on yourself, right? And it's all about you, there's a point where comfort becomes your God. And if comfort's your God, then you don't do uncomfortable things pretty much no matter what. And the only way to grow is to do things you're not used to doing, that you're not good at. It's to get uncomfortable. That's basically the definition of growth, right? We have to learn, we have to fail, we have to know what not to do in order to know what to do. And so, if you want to reach your potential, the only thing that'll make you want to actually get out of the comfort zone that doesn't end somewhere, where I believe is somewhere in the pursuit of that potential, is realizing that you have to do stuff that you don't want to do for the benefit of other people. Because I'm a big believer that if you can get out of your own head, the only way to do it is to really think, how do I affect others and how can I add value to the people around me? For example, when I was selling books my first summer, there's a moment where you're like, why am I doing this? You just got rejected all day, every day. You're selling some educational books, some apps, some ACT, SAT prep, you know. People are talking bad about you on Facebook. All of your friends are at home having a good time on the lake, playing video games. And you just have sort of this come to Jesus moment of like, what, this is, I don't need this. And, for me though, the reason I kept going, I think the reason most people do in this program is they're like, well, what's the point? Why is this worth it? And for me, it was, if I knocked on one kid's door, I was in Texas my first summer selling, 110 degree weather, almost every day. And I just thought if one kid went to college because they learned something about the ACT and got some scholarships, a couple extra points that gave them some confidence to do it, they went to college because I knocked on their door, it'd be worth it. Versus playing video games all summer, being comfortable all summer, and doing whatever I did the summer before as a high school senior graduate, it would be worth it,
Yes, I'm mindful. It's very funny. This kind of is shades of a very not great meeting I had to have with someone earlier. Where and I was telling someone, I said one of the hallmarks of my work is I don't try to insert myself into it in my artist statement, which I wrote when I started this whole journey in 2013. As I always said, it was my job to give people ideas to empower them to go out and do great things. Because I very quickly figured out it was not my job to lead the charge or do the great thing. Like, I very quickly figured out that was not my path. I was not that guy. I knew someone who was one of those people that everyone just wanted to follow, and I definitely was not that guy. And he was, and he was very one of those. I mean, he had the look for it. He was tall, 6'2", Scottish background. He was a pre-med student. He was insanely good looking. In fact, I think when I first saw him, I dropped the box I was carrying. But he was one of those that he could literally, march the whole country into the ocean, I think, if he really wanted to. It was just he had that natural charismatic leadership thing that people naturally want to follow. You see it in politicians all the time. Trump has it, Gavin Newsom has it, Barack Obama has it in spades. Bill Clinton had it, all this sort of thing. Ronald Reagan was the exempt. I mean, it takes a very special person to say, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." So you see these people that have the thing, and he had that thing. I quickly figured out I didn't have that thing, but what I'm really good at is telling people like him where to go. Like, to be kind of like, here's what you need to know. Here's how to get everybody there. Now go do it. So that's always been my thing, is I have to empower other people to go and do it. And they're going to be closer to the problem. They're going to have greater ideas. They're people that volunteer for the Red Cross and go do relief in Puerto Rico and all this type of thing. I wouldn't know where to start to do any of that. So I very quickly figured out if I give people the right ideas, if I empower them with the history, the knowledge, the context, all this type of thing, they're going to go forth and do great things. That is the heart of my work. That's the heart of the Cameron Journal. That's the foundation of pretty much everything we do here. And which is even why I have these conversations, because people listen to these interviews and they learn something, and then they go out and do great things. We're doing it right now. And so I, when it comes to that, I don't know if that if we'd want to define that as helping people, but that is
You're inspiring people. It's
certainly,
helping people.
yeah,
We could put that in a category.
but I mean, I think that is really the special sauce of kind of what makes everything around here go, is that I it's not really about me. And I find a little bit of comfort in that person at a personal level. I kind of like that it's not all about me.
Takes pressure off.
But I think that is, like I said, you hear that a lot. And I think that's very, there's a very kind of big important aspect of that. And I think that gives people maybe a great sense of purpose, which, as you
Yeah.
said, people live longer when they have a sense of purpose.
It's one of the most, absolutely, and it's also one of just the most freeing things. If you're not worried about performance, like making the sale, you're just worried about how do I make this mom smile when I was selling, or how do I help this entrepreneur reach their goals in life that we work with now. If that's the only goal, then there's really no fear in knocking on a door or making a phone call or trying to help somebody, right? I mean, you're just, hey, I'm just here to help. I'm like, I don't care if you buy something. Doesn't matter to me. I just want you to have good life.
Yeah,
How can I
no,
help
and
you, right? And I think
yeah.
people, when they worry about themselves, it causes them not to take steps of action because they're worried how they're going to look. They're worried how they're going to feel. They're worried how they're going to fail. They're worried about all this stuff. But if the mission is more important than your personal failure, then you're not going to give an F and you'll just do it. You know, if you're, if, see what I'm
Yeah.
saying?
No, I've always had this great rule because I was the type of kid that didn't like to do a lot. Like I like to do, it's partly an autism thing. I like to do the things I like to do. I
Sure,
didn't
sure.
necessarily like to do new things.
Sure.
And so, but in art, especially business somewhat, I have this rule that if I'm frightened to do it, I really have to do it. And so if I find a book plot that it really is kind of like, oh, I don't know how I'm gonna all this sort of thing, then that we absolutely must do that project, you know, sort of thing.
Sure.
Or, you know, or even, you know, with whatever it is, I absolutely have to, you know, the video that I don't think I can, I absolutely have to go do that. Or the person I don't think I can talk to, like the, before we got on, I was telling him about, I have a very awkward interview scheduled after this is, we're recording this on Friday, February 23rd, and Monday, I have a very awkward interview. And, but it was one of those things like, I don't want to have that conversation, which means I absolutely must have this person on the show.
Sure.
And that has honestly sometimes led to some fun moments. It's not always worked out, but it's also led to some really great things happening. And it's probably taken me in directions that I never thought I would go in.
Right. And you're willing to do it and you're happy to do it because you care about your audience getting value.
Well, that is the whole thing of the camera drill is we go and we explore things and I people are kind of like, well, what's your niche and what's your genre? I said, my niche is that I don't have one. Everyone else does that. And I've zagged and said, no, we're just exploring. We're going to go here. We're going to go there. If you come with me on this journey and we're going to see what's out there, what's happening, what we can learn, what can we see, what can we taste, all this type of thing. And that doesn't really exist anymore. Everything's become so narrow and siloed and all this type of thing. No one's just like, hey, we're on a journey and we're just going to see where that takes us, you know, in this weird sort of way.
Yeah, no, I totally
So,
get it. In fact, and so we do coaching consulting, you know, and we call it business growth
yeah.
instead of real estate, insurance, all the different, you know, niches that you could basically niche into. It's because we can look at a business. It doesn't matter what industry it is, you know. And in
Yeah.
fact, that in itself is its own niche, just like you're saying. I was thinking about that literally last week. It's like, oh yeah, like that's it's we're so because everyone else is so niche, we're so different. That we're able to handle a lot of our clients that we work with end up having like multiple businesses. And they're like, how do you combine all these together? Well, that's kind of what we do. How do we make it all cohesive, you know?
No, when I worked full time in marketing, I never really cared what your business sold because it was kind of all this like we this job
Right.
is the same. The phone has to ring, the emails have to come in, you need customers to buy whatever it is. It doesn't really matter. Like I've had clients that I've had a hairdresser, an HVAC company, I've had a clothing gift boutique thing, I've done B2B stuff. Like it's because it's all at the end of the day, it's kind of all the same thing. Like we're all trying to sell something to, I have to find out who your audience is, how we access them, and what's going to cost to put you in front of them.
Right.
Whatever it is, it doesn't matter if I'm selling cars, which I have done,
Yep.
or hair salon appointments. It's the same conundrum every single time, every single client. It's all about who's your audience, where are they, and how much is it going to cost to get us you to get you in front of them.
Right. And then is that profitable? And I would even
Yeah.
go further, the way that we like to work with businesses and the way we brand ourselves is in the helping others industry. And why is it worth it? What's the mission that's actually going to add value to people? You know?
Yeah. No, I think it's a very vital conversation. My LinkedIn following is going to love this interview. Some of my
Awesome.
general listeners may be able to kind of like ask it. I'm like, well, that's fine. There'll be another one on Friday. But you know, I think that's a, I think that's a very imp I think keeping it about, you know, about that and kind of, you know, what you're doing. I think also I think for a lot of times, I think it helps us be better people, be more honest, less exploitative, all that type of thing. I think that's all, you know, it kind of raises the conversation. It changes how you are with people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's it's in one of the early chapters of the book, but there's cigarette companies. You know, I'm basically like asked posed the question, what's your definition of success? I think people talk about it, but they really don't get in there to really define it for themselves. You know, I think we know what probably isn't good, but then we get there and if we're not prepared, we kind of just panic and make a decision. I think cigarette companies, for example, I don't care if you smoke cigarettes, but I think that they are just complete failures on its face of anything they do, and I just completely reject that they should exist because they're allowed to. It's a free country, but the definition of success is that you're killing people for money, and for me, that's just no. Like
To be
that's just
fair,
not.
we could also level that same accusation at automakers. 55,000 people die on America's roads every
No,
year. I
but it's
mean,
not guaranteed.
no, but it's greater than people that
It
die from smoking.
may be greater, but the net harm and the, to me, if at the end of the day,
I mean, but I think,
your
but this
product
gets into
will.
cost, but you, this also gets into cost benefit. Smoking is a, and I say this as someone who vapes, smoking is a
Sure.
nice thing that people do for their own personal pleasure.
Sure.
People still need to go places. So in our society, we've been kind of like, well, you don't need to smoke. We do need to drive places. So
Well,
we've sort of kind of accepted, yeah, we're gonna kill a small town every year on America's highways, but the
yeah.
benefit to society is greater than that. Society doesn't really get anything out of people
That's
smoking.
my point. That's my
Let's be
point.
fair,
That's my
like, you
point, right?
know.
There's, at the end of the day, my wife had a friend who died from secondhand smoke. It wasn't even their choice, So if we're going like, I don't care how much money it is, I don't care how. At the end of the day, the people who started cigarettes knew, at least after a certain point, right? They know now.
1954. Yeah, they knew in
They know
1954,
now
yeah.
that if you smoke cigarettes, it will lead to cancer and death prematurely, and that secondhand smoke does hurt people, and that it is addictive and it is created to be addictive, And I just, I'm a believer that that's missing the whole point. The whole point is the pursuit of helping people, right? Not just to how can we get the most money from somebody because we get them so addicted to a process, hence social media too, right? That causes you to go down some spiral, right? Like cigarettes is a health one, but mental health is a whole nother, category you could go
And
into of what all of this.
honestly, and social media companies in one way I think are a bit worse than cigarette companies because only about 49% of Americans ever smoked. And every actually got a majority of people don't know that. Whereas the
Sure,
social
sure.
media companies, they not only have they become a huge part of our society, they have integrated and ingratiated themselves into almost every aspect of society, merging the personal, the business, political activism. I mean, when Facebook causes a revolution in Myanmar, that's a problem. Due to their poor content moderation policies. I mean, Facebook also powers racism against Muslims in India by and because it allows Hindu nationalism to continue, all this sort of thing. And so I think in that way, social media companies are a bit worse because they've become so locked into our society that when they do something bad or allow bad things to happen, everyone gets some. That shit hits the fan and we all need our iron umbrella.
Sure, no,
So,
I
yeah.
mean, social media, I would put it on a different plane because it's really more mental health and then, what happens from, people's actions and stuff. Whereas cigarettes are just like, yeah, you smoke them, whatever, you get your little high and then, but you end up dying and then maybe you're hurting the person next to you. There's
I
at
mean,
the end of the day, you get
Zuckerberg
the
talks
choice,
about, but Zuckerberg talks about, I wanted the world to be a more connected place. He also
Sure,
was trying to
sure.
get laid at Harvard, but we've moved on from that.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, social media is designed to be addictive too, right? I almost most of the things that are designed to be addictive that aren't, that end in a negative net results, it's hard for me to really get excited about like putting effort into making that happen, if that makes sense. There's definitely good content on every social media platform, right? Like this I would consider as good content. Like we're talking about cool things. And it's good for people to learn and podcasts are great, YouTube's great, et cetera. But it's just when things just get to a point where they're out of control, almost anything can be bad, at the end of the day. It can be
Yeah,
holding you
no,
back
I
from
mean,
helping
there's,
people.
yeah, I mean, and there's even, I had, we talked about that, in the fitness community, a lot of the body dysmorphia, and women get a lot of press for bulimia and anorexia. We very, very rarely, only in gay spaces do I hear us talk about men's body dysmorphia in terms of, working out and doing very horrible, dangerous things to their bodies in the name of being bigger, being smaller, being leaner, all this type of thing. And I interviewed this fitness guy about this, and he said, yeah, it's really kind of a very kind of quiet epidemic. And I remember when I was in powerlifting, I never got into juicing and cycles because I'm genetically blessed. I'm a big dude. I've always been super strong. I don't need the needle help. I was fine.
Sure.
Like I haven't darkened a gym in 3 years and am still good. And so, but I mean, there was a whole thing. And there are people in the community I heard of who had died, you know, their heart blew out, their liver went, all this type of
I
thing. You know,
agree.
anything taken too far or to its extreme can start to have negative consequences, and that's something to be mindful of.
And I would go across to the some of those like fad diet like
Oh,
pills,
God,
like
yes.
all the like crazy diets. I just remember taking some nutrition course and it was like, yeah, just like do this and you'll be all right, And really what those are, right? All of those fad diets, the reason they exist is because in some way, shape, fashion, or form, the people who quote unquote need them have some sort of addiction or vice to something that's causing them to not have a healthy lifestyle, right? Whether it's
Yeah.
something online or an activity or smoke, whatever, right? At the end of the day, it comes down to not having a purpose big enough to avoid it, right? Or to do the
Or
thing.
even just being willing to accept yourself for who you are.
Exactly that too,
And
right? The
and that's
focus is
where like
on,
in especially
it's
in
an
queer
inward focus.
spaces, and especially in queer spaces, I'm kind of like, I am 36 years old, I have been fat forever, I am brown, I don't fit in here. It's very hard for me to listen to like gorgeous white dudes with a flat stomach who've never had more than 12% body fat this century be kind of like, oh, you know, I'm have all kind of like, have you just sat down with yourself and been like, maybe I'm okay with me and that's okay and screw everybody else? And like, have you ever had that? Like, I've had to sit down and have that conversation, be kind of like, you know what?
Once again,
I may be fat, but I'm not gonna let stop my life. And so I appear on here on camera all the time, and people on Twitter say I've been called Mr. Potato Head, Jabba the Hutt, I mean all these terrible things, blah blah blah
that
blah blah.
sounds
Like, I mean, it
terrible.
goes on. No, yeah, there's some of them are really entertaining. Like it goes on and on. I said,
Sorry.
have any of you dudes ever just sat down and been like, you
Right.
know what? I'm okay, and everyone else can go get stuffed. Like.
Again. And the reason they're doing this, right? Just going back to this whole potential thing is that if your pursuit is not helping others, you say mean crap, to
Yeah.
people because you have nothing better to do than to comment online something negative. Like, are you kidding? If your
Right.
purpose is to help people, then you're going to go help people and you're going to figure out the best way that you can add and benefit to society. And I think everybody has a passion, has a dream, and they just get discouraged somewhere along the way, and they just stop believing it's even possible, and then they identify with negative routines. In fact, there's Atomic Habits, book by James Clear that's all about how our identity, determines a cycle, right? And I have a chapter in the book called Identity Inspires Action. If you identify as a basketball player, you're gonna go be a basketball player. You're gonna go play. Like,
Right,
you only
yeah.
say that if you play regularly or you have played before. What people don't realize is that they want to be, they have this dream of who they want to be, right? What they want to do. And then if they're not doing, they don't realize it requires you to act out of character to change, to be uncomfortable, right? To go be the worst player in that space until you're the best player, which takes ridiculous amount of time and energy when nobody's looking, by the way. A lot of people, again, when you're focused on yourself, you only will perform or do things in the presence of others because you're just doing it for their approval, not for the ultimate goal of helping somebody, for example, or to grow, et
I mean,
cetera.
and it's funny you should talk about approval because I think that's where in a lot of the conversations we have about potential, especially in neurodivergent communities, is I think there's a lot of people who didn't get a lot of validation for what they did
100%.
or who they were.
Sure.
And for better or for worse, in certain settings, this happens a lot, school, academia, where they found their thing that they were good at and got that positive validation from. And people kind of then put all this stuff on you about, oh, the wonderful things you will do and the places will go and all this sort of thing. And then you find out, and this is kind of the tragedy of the American school system, is that your ability to do well in school and to get validation for that doesn't really translate to the rest of your life. And school is actually a very small portion of your existence. And I say that as someone who's overeducated and has 3 degrees. Like, I've spent 8 years post-secondary and all this type of thing. Like, that doesn't really translate outside of that very specific environment. And I think people end up flaming out because they're not willing to work quietly on their own by themselves without that constant validation from the teacher, from the authority to say, yes, you're doing a good job, all this type of thing. I think
If
that's where
there's
people
no,
start to flame out.
yeah, if there's no factory bell, right? You don't know what to do. School, most people don't realize this, but school is designed to, build you into an employee, a factory worker.
Yes,
The
but
bumper bell is.
we created a system to put bumpers on Fords. That was
That's why it's
yes.
there. And so you're used to just doing whatever it takes to fit in because that's what factory workers do. Your
Right.
entire job is to fit into place. But the reality is you're an entrepreneur, right? Part of the reason you have any following at all is because you're just really out of the box different. And that's
Yeah,
kind of the whole point.
yes.
That's kind of the whole point, like, is to
It is
not
the whole
be in
yes,
a box,
exactly.
right? And I think this is really important. I want to go back to one of the things about approval really fast. Because everyone comes from different situations. There's a lot of divorce, in the world nowadays, and people have these complex backgrounds at this point. And I always recommend something like this. I think people don't have a healthy relationship, or a hierarchy of friendships is what I call it in the book. They don't really limit who has access or influence over them. And to me, that's a problem.
Ooh, say that one more time.
People don't, they don't monitor or, limit who has access or influence over them. And so what happens is you're having people say things to you that you may not even have similar values with, or maybe doesn't even know you very well. And, just human beings, the way our brains work is we stereotype and we essentially make snap knee-jerk reactions and judgments. It's a self-defense mechanism, right? We don't want to die, right? So we fight or flight all the time. And so people will see something on the internet and make some negative comment. They'll see someone and they'll make a weird face or they'll go the other direction, whatever it is, right? It's based on all these perceptions. But if they don't know who you are, it doesn't matter. And I had to go through this real personally when I was selling books. People didn't know who I was and they treat me terrible when I knocked on their door, even though my intent was to help. So this does happen all the time in everything. I think it's really the reason we prejudge things and therefore we react in a we were expecting something negative. And they're prejudging me when I was selling books based off of a negative past experience. So what people need to realize when people are rude to you, when they reject you, when whatever, it's probably based on a negative past experience, probably has nothing to do with you. When I knocked on a door, if I took everything personally, I would probably be a mush on the floor.
Right, yeah.
The reality is, their dog could have just died and I knocked at a terrible time. They're not mad at me. They're mad about their dog, right? So the hierarchy of friendships, though, is this hierarchy where you have an inner circle, you have some close friends and acquaintances, then you have everybody else. And at the very end, far away from you as possible, is you have toxic influences. And I don't think people normally categorize their relationships in this way. Who should be in your inner circle? I go through that in the book, but it should be somebody who has similar values to you, knows you really well, right? Knows who you actually are, right? Not some caricature of you that no facade, right? We put up facades on too much to where we act a certain way. We want people to think about us in a certain way. But it needs somebody who challenges you too. You don't want a soundboard of the same types of people who only think a certain way as your inner circle. You need somebody to challenge you. Because what you don't realize is we all have blind spots. And by definition, blind spots are things we don't see. And if all of us have the same blind spots, we will not reach our potential. We won't, because we won't grow in areas that we need to grow. Right? So
No,
that's the inner circle,
I
right?
think having, a diverse amount of people around, I think is a great idea. And people are sometimes shocked. I was in Virginia in 2020, and I was at this writing retreat, and I had this very campy conversation. I said, sometimes I said, and this is especially true in our news and politics. I said, sometimes things get so vitriolic, we don't sit down and have a conversation as human beings. And I said, I
Right.
sat down with a lady who is a single issue abortion voter, very Catholic, has been Catholic for 45 years, all this happening. I said, we had dinner together. We had a great time. We talked about her single issue voting topic for 25 minutes and left with smiles on our faces, laughing as we walked upstairs. How is that possible? Because we were humans, we were people, and we shared a moment. We are not going to agree. I am an overeducated East Coast elite. We could not be farther apart politically, but we still had a great time because we were humans before we were just a Trump voter or a Biden voter or whatever have you. Like, That's but when that human connection formed, we ended up still having a great dinner. We had a great discussion. Again, we will never agree, and that's fine. But we had a great discussion. I hired a QAnon Trump person in my last publication. There's one, he was very good at doing our tech segment, and we did not agree politically, but he was very good at what his daughter. We had great discussions. We had a wonderful time together. And people, you should watch mouths open when I say, yeah, I have these conversations with these people. You know, I go and do, I have to, I have to talk with my family. You know, I'm one of my kind. That's, I'm not common in the rest of my life. I said, so yeah, you can have, and at the Cameron Journal, 45% of my readers are Republican because we have a human connection. And a lot of people don't always agree with everything I say, or everyone that I interview, or every conversation that I have, but that's okay because it's the relationship, it's the human connection. And if we can maintain that, we'll go far and we'll
Yeah.
be okay. And that, you'll be hard pressed to find that in this day and age, I find. It's sad.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's inflammatory. People are pretty upset over things, and then they just don't, they
Well,
don't
it's
humanize
about, it's oftentimes
situations.
it's about really silly things, and people, I think, to your point about the toxic influences, I think people let this stuff in and it lets the divide and set them apart against other people about stuff that really doesn't matter. Really,
Sure.
that we will have forgotten about, and social media will have given us something new to obsess upon to possibly as early as tomorrow, maybe later today. Like, I mean,
Same day.
but it's, but you've got, you know, you've had this whole great divide for what? Nothing.
Sure, and I think that's in the political sphere and just in general personal growth too. I'm just saying that,
Oh,
man,
even that blue
if
yellow
you,
dress thing, some stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
low rent, like why?
The silly things we all, we're all looking for stuff. And again, I think that all becomes really popular, all the toxic little things, because simply we're just focusing in the wrong places. Like, guys, why we've become so comfortable as a society that the goal is to have, the American dream, just the really nice things, and there's nothing wrong with the American dream. I think that's a great concept. But I'm just saying, once you've gotten to the place where you're doing well, there's statistics that show your happiness after a certain income level, I think $150,000 a year. Once you're past that point, happiness really doesn't change, from income. I just think
Yeah.
people care too much about money and they care too much about these different things. And they should be caring about, like, okay, there's real problems in the world. And there's a way that I believe that you've been designed to help solve some of those problems, that you can do something somewhere, somehow, that you have a certain strength that others don't, that, and we need you. We need every single person to do something to help others. And if our focus is on that, like, I think, like, this is, maybe this is a hot take, I don't know. This is a theory based on nothing but my intuition. But I've started a foundation. We haven't really started doing things yet, but it's really based on this idea that the true problem in people not knowing purpose, not having, being impoverished, at least on a face level, really comes down to not schools, not always education, but really just networking, knowing people. I believe that if you grow up in a town with parents, whatever, no, or one single parent, whatever, but you never meet a doctor, you'll probably never be a doctor. If you never
Yeah.
experience a connection with someone who does something in a different way, we end up being a product of our environment. Right? Just that hierarchy of friendships, right? If we never surround ourselves with people who think differently, who are doing other things, right, that are successful, we become, Jim Rohn said, that the average of our five closest friends, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, the real problem is networking. It's that thing you just said where we don't want to talk to people. It's where if we
Yeah.
could get kids who maybe their parents have never had an opportunity to meet an entrepreneur. Maybe their parents have never met an entrepreneur, right? Or never really had like a relationship. Maybe they met them. People meet business owners when they go into businesses, but never really have a conversation about why they're doing it or how they got there. Or they meet a doctor, they meet a lawyer, they meet, insert any other job that is decent paying, right? An HVAC, whatever, engineer, you come up with anything. To me, that seems to be the only actual thing, because obviously when a kid goes to school, if their dad is or mom is really successful, school probably didn't do that much. I mean, it helped. But it's really probably the parent at the end of the day. If they had an uncle, right?
No,
How many people have an uncle
statistically
and they get
speaking,
an awesome
we know
job?
that. Yeah.
How many people got
Yeah.
a cousin, right? It's because of their family relationships that they get stuff. Well, there's a lot of people out there who don't have maybe great families, or maybe you don't have connections to any of these, decent middle income or upper income type opportunities. And I, again, like I said with the cigarette company, like the goal in life is to help people. I don't, money's great, but money to me is just fuel for a mission. At the end of the day, it's just fuel to help more people. How can we make the world a better place? But that's really, that's what, at the end of the day, it's just the network is who you're around, because the identity inspires action. And if you identify like, oh, I know lawyers. Oh, I could be a lawyer. It's not that crazy.
No, I think a lot of, I mean, we talk about this a lot in black BIPOC spaces, for young children, if they can't see it, they can't imagine it. And and that, and I've gotten pushback from that, from, my mother, who will say, well, that's a failure of imagination. And I said,
It's not reality.
yeah, but I said, I remember the first I used to go to this children's writing program at the Barnes & Noble bookstore near where my parents lived. It was ran by a professional writer. I have never told this story before. And it was really fun because we got to write and study stories and read, and it was super fun. And I said, I've never really thought about that, but I think meeting her and seeing, oh yeah, that's what that looks like. Even for me, who grew up in a very nice area with a lot of economic privilege, a lot of other people didn't have, all this type of thing. I was able to see it. And so and then it wasn't so outlandish to say,
Right.
and people don't understand when you come from a more impoverished background, especially, like in the Black community, if you grew up in, the projects in like North Chicago, whatever have you, and the most well-paid person is like the manager of fast food.
You're going
Unconsciously
to
or
think,
not, that
you think
becomes the
that's the goal.
ceiling of what you think you can
Yes.
achieve.
Have you ever heard of the sand flea experiment?
Yes, but
You have heard of that.
tell the listener.
Yes, so it's the sand flea experiment. This is so interesting. I was doing a lot of research on the book to really prove some of these concepts, because they were intuitive to me, because I had seen it so often with college students when I'd recruit them. I'd rec just like you said, you had like that really great charismatic person, and then they wouldn't believe in themselves at all. They'd have like some issue of the belief themselves. And I was just like, how is this even possible? And so the sand flea experiment was done. I can't remember all the specifics. I'll just give the general piece of it. And if you want to read my book, all the studies are in there. These scientists put some fleas that can fleas can jump 3 or 6 meters or something. They can jump really far. These little tiny things, like jump, wow, like that's, isn't that gross, right? Walking around 6 feet
Right, yeah,
jumping.
indeed.
So they can jump really, 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 really far. And they said, okay, let's put them in a jar, 6 inches, 19 inches, whatever it was. And we're just gonna close the jar for 2 weeks, and then we're gonna let them out. We're gonna see if they get conditioned. And they throw a bunch of fleas in there. They wait 2 weeks. They come out. And the fleas, no matter what you do, would not jump higher than like 6 or 12 inches their rest of their life. We don't realize that when we think there's a ceiling, it creates one.
Yeah, no,
And
absolutely. Whether consciously or unconsciously,
it's there.
that becomes the ceiling. That's the highest as you think you can ever go, and that
Without
ends up
trying.
unfairly limiting your potential, even though you
Yeah.
might be
Because you're
able to
not
go far
motivated.
farther. You can't see it, so
Yeah.
it
If you
doesn't
don't
happen.
believe that you can, then you won't. You'll not even take a step to try, because what your brain does, what's the point? And that's called nihilism. And unfortunately, I'm a big believer that nihilism has really infected our culture, and I think social media, I think a lot of people want you to feel small, insignificant, that you can't do things. Personally, I'm a Christian, and so yeah, I'm a believer that's what the devil's doing to everybody all the time. It's trying to make you feel insignificant and lonely and unimportant, and that you can't, and just, if people just understand that it's really not that crazy, that you just see the tip of the iceberg of every single person, and you don't realize that all the stuff they did was, a lot of it was controllable to get to where they were. It was just behind closed doors. And all we see is the perfect, beautiful branding, which is why I have this nice camera here. Or like the background, right? It looks cool, but you didn't see all the failure leading up to this moment. And that's what people have to realize. And they set goals too. Like, we all set goals based on what we think is possible. We don't set goals with the belief that we're going to grow and change and become better. And we limit ourselves even that way.
No, I think there's a lot to that, and I think that's a very, it's a very important I think that shift in mindset, if there's any one thing that I think is so important for people coming from, diverse backgrounds, if there's kind of one thing that I think is, to the advantage when you come from a certain amount of privilege, is the view of possibilities of your life is greater. And so even if you never get to the end goal for whatever reason, you still got a lot farther than if you didn't know it existed at all.
Yeah.
In fact, the person I mentioned, the very charismatic person, he actually ended up becoming a doctor. But he ended up becoming a very good paramedic in helicopters in Philadelphia. And so he's doctor adjacent. In some ways more important, because he's the person that shows up when in your car accident, or when you've fallen off a building or off a bridge or whatever have you. He's the poor person that's going to make sure you get to the hospital where the doctors are.
There you
And
go.
we need more of them. So
Right.
thank goodness that he went into that.
Sure.
And all this sort of thing. But I mean, that's something where, I mean, his, he came from a family of very modest background, very modest means one of three, Scottish Catholic. And that was something where I think really his ace in the hole, was that, one, he had a great woman in his life who encouraged him, and who came from a different background and was had this kind of big view. And also he'd had the experience to see what was possible. And I think that is fantastic. And I think there's a lot of people who never reach what they could do because it's just not in their imagination. They can't see
Yep,
it, they
they
can't
never met
imagine it, but it's
somebody.
not their
They
imagination.
never met somebody, you know, right? If they just meet somebody, you know, things would solve itself. We just get people who want to help people to meet people who need purpose, things get solved, you know. There's one last thing I want to mention because I know we're kind of running out of time here, but you've heard of the Milgram experiment?
Yes.
Yeah,
Tell the
okay.
listener.
Perfect. And you may know the statistics better than me, but I'm going to go off of what I can at least recall from a podcast that we did, a YouTube video that we did from way back. But going in with the diversity that you were mentioning, you know, that population background too, the Milgram experiment is this experiment they did like in the 50s, 60s, and they were trying to figure out how authoritarian control can essentially influence behavior, right? So if someone tells you to do something, how hard is it to really fight back, you know, because there's a lot of people who are like, oh, you know, like with Nazis or whatever, it's like, oh, I'd never do that. But they don't realize that groupthink is an actual psychological
That's what the German people
term.
thought in 1933. They were very surprised
They're
what
very
had
surprised.
transpired in the decade after.
It's wild, right? So what they did is they got a psychological, you know, person that was, you know, one of the doctors or whatever, being the person, the teacher, who's basically asking questions or having this person do, you know, perform certain tasks. And the task was essentially electrocuting, an actor. So the actor never got hurt actually, but it was an actor who, you know, the shock would, he would react. And the teacher would tell the person who, the subject who had no idea what was going on, he thought this was real or she thought this was real. And they would basically tell them to, every time they miss one of the questions that they would ask, you should shock them, and then you go up a voltage, a certain voltage. And eventually you'd get to the end of the volts where it would be lethal. At least it would be marked lethal, didn't actually kill the actor. So they went through the experiment. The teacher would tell the person to ask a question. The actor would purposely miss, and they said shock them. And then you hear an ouch. It sounds really real. And they would continue to do that, and it got to the point of lethality. And the teacher said, well, you know, they missed the question, so you need to do it. And they found an astounding number of people at that moment. They might talk back a little bit, but eventually, because the teacher told them to do it, 63% of people would press the button and administer a lethal shock to someone they didn't know simply because the teacher told them you're supposed to do it.
Sad, ain't it?
It's super sad, but it's why talking about politics is really important. But also, if you're young, if we're going on the personal development side of things, and you're told to do one thing or the other, or you can't, or whatever, 63% of people are going to not fight that, just statistically, because it's not in their nature to want to do that, you know, in the way that they think. And so we're making it harder for people when we tell them that they can't do certain things.
No, and that's why I think, exposure to stuff is important. Having a certain amount of visibility is important. Like right now, there's a lot of, people of color in television and movies now that we haven't really had before. And I said, it's been a long journey from Hattie McDaniels in 1939 first woman to win Best Supporting Actress. They would not seat her in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. They brought her through the kitchen to the back door long enough for her to pick up the award and be escorted out. And then we had Nichelle Nichols on television as Uhura, who MLK had to beg to stay because of how awful she was treated. He begged to stay on the show. And that inspired Whoopi Goldberg. And that has now given us a wonderful stable of amazing people, the Halle Berrys and Denzel Washington, all these other people. I said, it's taken my Nana's born in 39. It's taken my Nana's whole lifetime to get to this point. And it's really a matter of visibility, of there's more out there than you think that there can be.
Yep,
And
absolutely.
that, to me, there's nothing more transformative for young people. There's nothing more transformative for society, than to have that where we can say, oh, okay, there's more possibilities out there than I originally thought. I think it sets everyone free. I think it sets men free from being narrowly stuck in the man box. That's another podcast. Sort of thing. I mean that, there's a lot of possibilities out there. And I think that if we're talking about human potential, then I think having that is absolutely vital.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Well, we're at the hour, so we need to do plugs. So why don't you let us know where you are online, how we can keep in touch with you, and where to buy the book?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything about me and what I do is joeignis.com. And if you just do joeignis.com/theproblemwithpotential, all one word, no dots or anything like that, you can read about why I wrote the book. And there's a link directly to the Amazon link. You can also just go to Amazon and type in The Problem with Potential, Joe Ignis, and that'll pop up as well. That's where you can get those things. So love to connect with you guys. We do a weekly newsletter. We post on YouTube at Joe Ignis every single Thursday, a new episode about how to grow your business. And we also are running shorts of some of the best moments of some of the different topics of speeches and workshops that I do all around Knoxville, Tennessee, and beyond. So love to connect with you guys if you're in that entrepreneurial space or in general, just want to learn how to grow as a human being.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Cameron. Really appreciate it.
That's all for this episode of the Cameron Journal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Visit us online at CameronJournal.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I love to talk to my followers and listeners, so please feel free to get us on social media at Cameron Cowan on Twitter. And we'll see you next time on the Cameron Journal Podcast.